The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Today is the day that would have been Purim if it wasn't for the fact that we have a leap year. So Purim Katan, or Little Purim, which I think has very little significance to anybody except for the fact that we think to ourselves, this is what it could have been if things were early, but not that late this year. So it's another month to wait until we get to Purim. Just an interesting thought that I wanted to put out there for listeners, perhaps to get a little bit of feedback to what people think about this particular story. The Religious Affairs Minister, Matan Kahane, has made a recommendation of implementing the ability to get married, for Israelis to get married at consulates around the world, which is not really the more controversial part of the bill, because in return for that, because that's considered to be giving up on something, in return for that, he wants to roll back the law of return a little. And he, instead of allowing grandchildren of people who are halachically Jewish to claim citizenship of the State of Israel upon arrival, he would like to roll that back to only children rather than grandchildren. Now, the reason why the law of return says that a grandchild of any person who's halachically Jewish, whether it be a grandmother or a grandfather, can immediately claim a citizenship in Israel is because that was how Hitler viewed things during the time of the Shoah, that if you had one Jewish grandparent, you were eligible to be treated as a Jew and put into concentration camps and to be labeled with a yellow star. And so the State of Israel took on that particular definition and said, if you were good enough for Hitler to label you as Jewish, you're good enough to claim citizenship in the State of Israel in the post-Hitler period. Now the plan is to try to roll that back to make it only children of people who are halachically Jewish. In other words, if your mother or father are Jewish either side, then you can claim citizenship. And apparently, according to Matan Kahane, this is all about trying to maintain the Jewish nature of the State of Israel, because there is a feeling that by allowing so many people who are halachically not considered Jewish to claim citizenship, there is a certain dilution of Jewish values in the State of Israel. I would take it up and disagree with him, because I think that the State of Israel, in spite of this particular law, has a very Jewish feel about it. It's very, very difficult for anybody, even those who might land here from Mars, to think that they're not in a Jewish state. What do people out there think?
It's really a fascinating conversation, because do you really want to be defined as a Jew the way Hitler did it? It's just such a strange concept. And of course, as you said, it goes to the very nature of the Jewish state. 34519 or 061-895-1019. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett is on a surprise visit to Bahrain. Are these guys ever in Israel, the cabinet?
Well, they are, apparently, but at the moment,
only sporadically.
The Prime Minister is not. Mm-hmm. And this is the very first visit to Bahrain by an Israeli Prime Minister since the signing of the Abraham Accords. So it is very significant. But with other things going on in the world, it kind of seems to almost have taken something of a back seat, even in the national press. It's not necessarily being declared in the main headlines of the news, and it's somewhere down on the front pages, but somewhere lower down and not in the headlines. And I think that this is really a headline story. But obviously, things with Bahrain important enough to justify a visit, even at this time when there are obvious tensions in Europe and a lot of issues to discuss and to deal with. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett set off yesterday from Ben Gurion Airport. He landed in Manama at the invitation of the Bahraini Prime Minister, who is also the Crown Prince, Salman bin Hamad Al Khalifa. Al Khalifa being obviously the ruling family in Bahrain. And Naftali Bennett will also meet today with his father, King Hamad, being Isa Al Khalifa, as well as various other members of government, including the foreign minister and the foreign and the finance minister, other ministers, and of course representatives of the local Jewish community, which is what the prime minister very much likes to do when he travels around the world. We understand that the main agenda items for the meetings between the two leaders is first and foremost to sign a memorandum of understanding for technological cooperation between Bahrain and Israel. And this visit, of course, follows on a visit that was made a couple of weeks ago by Defense Minister Benny Gantz, when he signed a memorandum of understanding to increase defense cooperation between Bahrain and Israel. One of the more significant interests that Israel has in Bahrain is the fact that the United States has its navy, has the Navy's Fifth Fleet stationed in Bahrain. And along those lines, Israel has decided to appoint a permanent naval officer to be stationed in Bahrain to be the coordinator, the go-between person between the US Fifth Fleet and the IDF, the Israeli Navy in particular, the very first time that an Israeli officer will be stationed in an Arab country, which is very fascinating in and of itself. But obviously, we're focused much more on Prime Minister Naftali Bennett's visit today, and I'm sure that he will be talking security cooperation and other things which are not necessarily things that will be discussed in the press under four eyes. But a very significant moment, a very significant visit, and one wonders to what extent this may or may not tie in with events that are going on in Eastern Europe with Russia's aggression on the Ukrainian border. I'm sure that all of this will be definitely part of the agenda. Both Bahrain and Israel have a certain interest in how things play out in that part of the world as well.
Tensions remain high in the Russia-Ukrainian conflict. What does this mean for Israel? I know Israel's urging citizens to leave. I know some of the planes aren't full, so they're not leaving, or as many of them as should be. What is going on? What is the situation?
We started speaking yesterday about some of Israel's interests. Obviously, first and foremost, the safety of its citizens. No doubt, the planes are not full. And in fact, we understand that El Al has even extended places to U.S. citizens who wish to leave the Ukraine. And of course, the U.S. has made a public statement, as well as some other countries around the world, including the U.K., I think, that no evacuation flights will be made available by those governments to their nationals. So they're telling people that if they want to leave, they need to get out on their own steam. And El Al, who has chartered a number of planes to help evacuate Israelis and indeed some Jews, non-Israelis, but Ukrainian Jews who wish to leave, has also made places available to non-Israelis, U.S. citizens in particular. So that's first and foremost the Israeli community and, of course, the Jewish community on a wider level. Israel is very much interested, as we'd mentioned yesterday, in some of the imports that we get from the Ukraine, grain, certain construction commodities, steel and things like that that we need for construction sites. We also spoke about eggs, which are, of course, of foremost importance. And the other, I think one of the main, one of the things that we also spoke about was the distraction from Iran and the fact that Iran might well wish to get involved and do to carry out some revenge attacks while attention is diverted towards Eastern Europe. And the same might be said of forces in southern Syria, where, of course, Russia is very much dominant and has a very, very strong presence. And the question is, when Russia's attention is diverted to somewhere else, what may take place in southern Syria and to perhaps a lesser degree in Lebanon, while Russia is doing other things? That is also something which Israel is concerned about. But I think the main discussion point really surrounds NATO, because what's come out in recent days, become more obvious in this whole discussion, is Russia's fear that Ukraine will become a fully fledged member of NATO and thereby bring Western influence right onto the border with Russia through Ukraine's membership of NATO. And I think that we've seen that when the Russian President Vladimir Putin has said we can step back from this conflict if Ukraine undertakes not to become a member of NATO, the Ukrainian president in return has vacillated and initially said, okay, we will do that, and then has subsequently changed his mind and said, hang on a second, constitutionally there's nothing stopping us from becoming a fully fledged member of NATO, and we have the right to do so as a member of the international community. Why should we back down from this under a threat of aggression from Russia? So the Ukrainian president at the moment, at least, standing very, very firm on the issue of their right to become, in the fullness of time, a fully fledged member of NATO. Now, Israel has a certain interest in watching what goes down with Ukraine and NATO for a number of reasons. First of all, even though Israel, like Ukraine, is not a fully fledged member of NATO, both Ukraine and Israel have a certain cooperation that they have with NATO. And in fact, Israel has undertaken military exercises in coordination with NATO forces. The cooperation between Israel and NATO is relatively well known. And in the event that Israel had to call upon military assistance for any reason, Israel would like to think that NATO countries will come to Israel's assistance. Now, we also have a special relationship with the US military, which is a kind of a direct relationship outside of NATO. But overall, Israel really looks to NATO, and in particular the Western countries who are members of NATO, as a potential backup to any conflict, to any issue that Israel may suffer. And so Israel is watching this very, very carefully, because I think that the Israeli government views itself in a similar context to the way that Ukraine currently is in terms of its relationship with NATO. And if Russia does choose to carry out an attack, which is still potentially on the cards for tomorrow, we can talk about that a little bit more, but potentially on the cards for tomorrow, Israel will be watching very carefully to see what NATO's response is. Will NATO come to the assistance of Ukraine in the event of a conflict or not? And this is a big open question mark, which I think is of major interest to Israel. And fortunately, unlike Ukraine, Israel has a very strong military of its own and doesn't necessarily need the same backup that the Ukraine does, because unfortunately the Ukrainian army is not of the same standard as the IDF is at the moment, and therefore Ukraine needs NATO a lot more. But the real question is, will NATO be there in the hour of need? This is a big test for NATO and a big interest area for Israel.
It, what's so fascinating is that the United Nations, I mean, Antonio Guterres came out with a statement saying, you know, they must de-escalate. It's a concern. Well, thanks very much. I mean, this has been going on for weeks and weeks now. But the United Nations seems completely irrelevant. It's so fascinating that this is all about NATO in terms of keeping the peace. The United Nations seems to be completely, completely irrelevant.
Well, I think the question is, what can the United Nations really do? I mean, the United Nations as an organization is there to say a lot, but not to do very much. And we've seen that over and over with UN activities. So it doesn't surprise me that the UN is completely irrelevant to this. But I think the main reason why NATO is really center and front on this particular issue is because NATO is exactly the problem that the Russians fear, that NATO might well become entrenched on their own border, whereas right now the most easterly reach that NATO has towards Russia is within Turkey. So Turkey, while Turkey is a very, very strategic and important member of NATO, because amongst other things, Turkey holds the control over the Bosphorus, which is the entrance to the Black Sea. The Black Sea being a very strategic asset to the Russians. They have big naval bases in the Black Sea, in the Crimea and other areas of the Black Sea. And if they want to get their naval vessels in and out of the Black Sea and get through to the Mediterranean, then they really need Turkey's cooperation. So the fact that Turkey is a member of NATO, and by the way, right now, cooperating with the Russians to allow free access in and out of the Black Sea. There was a great picture that I saw yesterday of a Russian submarine sailing through the Bosphorus into the Black Sea, clearly with Turkey's full cooperation, Turkey being a full member of NATO, and clearly with Turkey's full cooperation. This submarine was visible. I mean, it hadn't submerged at all. As it sailed through the Bosphorus, it was very much visible as it was going through. No secrets, no issues with Turkey cooperating with that. So Turkey's control over the Bosphorus and the entrance to the Black Sea is also of strategic significance in this particular discussion.
Yeah, and I think the next 24 hours are very, very important as rumors continue to circulate that Russia will attack by Wednesday. So that is tomorrow. We'll obviously be keeping an eye on this story. Israel has formally banned sexual orientation conversion therapy. Well, I would have hoped so. What is the story here?
Yeah, so the question really is why this was needed in the first place. And this was something that has been announced by Israel's Minister of Health, Nitzan Horovitz, who himself is openly gay and has obviously been highly critical of any conversion therapy practices, which seem to be relatively widespread in certain communities in Israel. And this whole sexual orientation conversion therapy really surrounds the belief that people can be convinced as to what their sexual orientation will be, what their gender identity will be. These days, of course, we see it's very, very open and very common for people to identify one way or the other, things that were perhaps not particularly accepted in days gone by. And of course, these are things which come into direct conflict with our religion. And, you know, where Israel is concerned, we have a great double face where this particular matter is concerned, because on the one hand, Tel Aviv is the host of one of the biggest and the best and the most successful gay pride parades in the world, where people, gays, lesbians, LGBTQ members of that community come to Israel specifically for the gay pride parade. It's considered to be so warm and welcoming and open to people of that community. They love coming here. And on the other hand, we've got this very, very strong religious element, which is entirely opposed to any concept of gender identity changes or sexual orientation, which might be considered to be slightly off the beaten track. And of course, the therapy that people has become quite common in Israel is really a lot of that therapy is really based within the ultra-Orthodox religious community, where members of their community come out with gender identity issues or making clear that they're perhaps not of heterosexual orientation. And many of the big rabbis recommend them for sexual orientation rehabilitation therapy to try to convince them as to what they should be doing. And this is exactly what the Minister of Health has come out banning. It's going to be interesting to see how that sits within the ultra-Orthodox community, because I know that they are very big fans of this therapy in many cases.
Yeah, and absolutely a shame and a disgrace. It is 8:01. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Chai FM. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45.